Welcome back, folks, to another episode, first episode in a very long time, of the Nintendo Wirecast. As always, I am one of your hosts, Amiibo Jason, and with me, as always, is the man, the myth, the legend, the man I miss so much, Hero TJ. How you doing, man?
Miss you too, brother. It's so good to hear from you. I really missed our chats, and I'm glad that we get to talk some Nintendo today.
Me too. I'm too afraid to even look at the last time we did a podcast, because I know it's been a long time, and it's my fault. It's not Hero TJ's fault. You might notice on the YouTube channel, he's the one consistently uploading now compared to me. But I had a baby, which I've mentioned before on this podcast. But she is now 8 months, and I am exhausted. Absolutely exhausted all the time. I got a new job, which I'm working at home, you know, through that too. So baby, new job. I'm trying to work, you know, through Nintendo Wire, doing all that stuff too. So it's been hectic. So TJ, I apologize for the inconsistency.
No apology necessary, my friend. I've been there. I've had new jobs and I've had three babies. So I know exactly what you're going through. You and Happily Candied are killing it over there. You got one of the cutest little baguettes I've ever seen.
Well, thank you.
You guys are doing something right.
So that's my, I guess, life in a nutshell. I mean, obviously, we're still in this kind of weird COVID timeline at the moment. It's getting better here in the U.S. for the most part. Restrictions are a lot less severe as they used to be. Masks are coming off, you know, for a lot of people. I got fully vaccinated. I know pretty much everybody else got vaccinated in the country for the most part. I think we're up to like 60%. What about you, though? How are things going in Taiwan?
Unfortunately, as far as the virus is concerned, things have taken a turn for the worse, but Taiwan is very well equipped to handle this kind of stuff, and culturally speaking, virus management is something that there's a very widespread cooperative effort to try to stem.
Yeah.
So we're in what you'd consider, I guess, to be voluntary lockdown right now, and it's right at the brink of being put to mandatory lockdown.
Okay.
But every effort is being made to create there. I think Taiwan is very close to putting out to market their own homegrown vaccine, and then they're also trying to import as much vaccine as they can. But there's a very low level of vaccination in Taiwan because we've had very limited access to the vaccine. But people are being very conscientious. People are being very safe. We're not spending a whole lot of time out of the apartment now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to the gym, which is
that's got
to
be tough.
Of a downer. That's the toughest
for you.
Thing. That's,
I mean, not for me. I'd be fine with that. But for you,
yeah, that's the thing that I usually spend somewhere between 2 to 4 hours at the gym a day. So this is a dramatic disruption of my typical routine, and there's just really no way to completely supplement what I do at the gym at home.
Ring Fit's not cutting it.
Ring Fit's great, and I have been doing the Ring Fit, and I really appreciate that. My son's been doing it a lot,
yeah,
too. He's been doing it for like 3 hours a day. It's getting to the point where my wife and I are having to cut him off at
some
point.
Oh, my God.
But I can't even overstate how impressed I am with the dramatic transformation of his abilities. He's 6 years old,
yeah,
and before he started doing Ring Fit 2 weeks ago, he could barely rip off like four passable push-ups, where if you were to see him do a push-up, you could identify that's the exercise he's attempting to do. That
yeah.
would be the highest compliment you could pay
sure.
for that. And now he could rip off 40 perfect push-ups.
Dang.
No problem. And he gets excited to do it. He's like, nobody's stronger than me. And he drops down and starts doing these. I'm like, whoa, Ring Fit is serious. Kid is in phenomenal shape now.
That's your son, for sure.
That is my son, yeah.
See, my daughter and I have been doing Let's Dance, which is, you know, it's not as extreme as Ring Fit, but it's still a good amount of cardio. I have my
yeah.
Apple Watch on, and it tells me how many calories I burn from dancing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she's very much into that right now, too. So, video games, keeping you healthy.
For sure. It's nice to have that in these times when getting out of the apartment is difficult and ill-advised.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, thankfully there are ways to integrate our workout and our gaming interests into one thing. If I feel like every time we podcast together, it's the Ring Fit show.
Yeah,
but it's a great app.
It's been not so much in my routine lately. It should be. I've been finding when my daughter goes to bed, I have about an hour before I pass out, and that hour is typically spent like just trying to relax from the day. Yeah. I'm trying to get out of that mindset because it's a dangerous mindset to be in where your only free time is being spent doing nothing. So I typically sit here in this very chair for my full-time job, all day, 8 hours a day. And I need to get out of this, you know, I need to get out and do something. So Just Dance is a way to do that. I'm trying to do some VR, but I think Ring Fit's going to have to, start coming back in my daily routine. So,
yeah. Expect more. I don't know if that. You heard, but I set the world record for one of the Ring Fit exercises.
Are you serious?
Actually, to be
was it the weekly world record or the full world record?
I tied the world record.
Dang.
And,
okay.
And my score is unbeatable because it is the max that the game allows you to do, 999 reps.
So, what was this on?
Mighty Pectoralis Major. So it's 999. It's where you push the ring in. You hold it for a few seconds, and then you release. Then you push the ring in, you hold it for a few seconds, and then you release.
Any cheating?
I did not cheat at all. In fact, I videotaped it. I became aware after about 200 that people might suspect that I was just doing that. And I'm sure a lot of the people who maxed it out did do that because it would be a lot. There are a lot easier ways to do that than actually flexing your pectoral muscles. So I was like, hey, wife, can you videotape me doing this so I can establish with certainty that this is a legitimate record? And so she shot it. I think actually I put some of it into one of the Me Weekly episodes.
How long did it take?
It took a long time, and that's why I'll never do it again. I feel like maybe 20 minutes.
Oh, man.
20 minutes of the same exercise. I was burning. It was. I don't want to pretend that this was easy. Yeah. It was extremely challenging.
I mean, you're the fittest guy I know. After the fact, like the next day, were you sore?
I wasn't sore.
You weren't sore. Come on, man. How did that happen?
You know, when I train those muscle groups a lot, and that's a big muscle group.
Yeah.
So it just gets a lot of the reps were high.
Yeah.
So the level of fatigue was high, but the level of like muscular deterioration was somewhat minimal because the weight that I'm actually moving is very little.
Got it.
And my body's used to moving a lot more weight.
I'm impressed. I'm not going to try to do that. I will do the other one. The one we have to do, I think you get like 20 or 30 seconds to do it.
You know what? I have tried. I don't know how you do it. I've watched you do it. Yeah. So I know that you're achieving this score legitimately. And you're casually beating my best. Like when you're like, oh, that wasn't a very good one. It's still 4 or 5 reps higher than the best that I can possibly do on my most amazing run of it. I don't know how you're doing it.
I have no idea either. Part of me thought, am I cheating? Which is why I wanted to show you what I did it.
You're a faster flapper than me. No. I don't know, so remember the name of...
I've been flapping for years, TJ.
If you flapped any faster, you'd be able to fly.
That's true.
Mm. Yeah, that's fantastic.
So, I think today we are going to spend most of our time discussing two things. E3 and the Switch Pro.
Sounds good.
Switch Pro, in quotes, I should say at this point. This is, I think, the third time we've discussed the potential Switch Pro on this podcast. I pushed this podcast a day back because I expected it to be announced today. Right. I still fully expect it to be announced before E3. I can sense that you're skeptical of that claim.
I'm skeptical because we've been hearing rumors of a Switch Pro since the release of the first Switch.
That's true.
I'm just numb to it. I'm completely desensitized to all of the supposed leaks and then these speculative articles, even from reputable leakers and reputable sources that are reporting on it. We know a Switch Pro is coming. That's not a secret. It's guaranteed to come out at some point. And Nintendo made no secret of the fact that they intend the Switch to be iterated upon rather than replaced. And that was information that we knew very early into the Switch's life. So it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And I feel like the timing is very bad, like unusually
interesting.
Bad. Taiwan is one of the unmatched leaders in the global market of semiconductors. They make somewhere around 50% of the world's semiconductors, and there's a huge semiconductor shortage right now.
Yeah, it's bad.
So I don't really see Nintendo being in a position where they can manufacture substantial quantities of a new console in this particular climate. Now, if they had somehow managed to snatch a bunch of them up before all of this happened, and they've got a sizable enough stock where they actually have something that they can put out to market, maybe. But unless this is, they want to announce it now and the release date is somewhat far off, my feeling is that it's probably not something we're going to see before 2022.
And it's odd because what we're hearing from Bloomberg, and I think Wall Street Journal as well, is a September-October launch of this year. The parts are already supplied. I guess apparently Nintendo has them already. They're starting the assembly process. Again, if you're taking any of these leaks at face value. OLED screen, which again, I think Samsung is providing the OLED screens. But holistically, I mean, it's not really a major upgrade in the sense of the console itself. I mean, obviously it's going to have more horsepower, but it sounds like a lot of the magic is happening within the dock itself, which is going to do some sort of AI upscaling to 4K, which is absolutely fascinating stuff. I did a whole video on NVIDIA's AI upscaling. It is absolutely fantastic technology. So if they are using that and they're leveraging that instead of, I guess, relying on a new GPU or a new CPU or brand new cutting edge stuff, I'm all for that. I do think it's coming out this year. The amount of, and again, the leaks have been incredibly inconsistent, but the amount of industry leaders who have confirmed that this is coming, it's too damn high. And I just feel like it has to happen at this point.
I've definitely been wrong before. When I heard that Super Mario 3D All-Stars would be three or four of Mario's most celebrated adventures all on one, in packaged together in one SKU, I was like, nah, that ain't happening. That's not how Nintendo rolls. But I was wrong. And where Switch Pro is concerned, again, I know it's coming. Everybody does. I'm sure that there is some truth to a lot of the rumors, and I'm sure a lot of it is speculation that is being reported as news because everybody wants a piece of the pie.
Yeah.
And we've been in games journalism for years now, and
most of it doesn't pan out.
It's nothing new for people to make stabs in the dark because it's a hot topic and they want a piece of the pie. And I don't it's partly why my general policy is I don't mind talking about speculation, but you'll never see an episode of Me Weekly where I'm reporting on leaks or speculation.
Yeah.
Because to me, leaks and speculation is not news. It's interesting and it's fun to talk about, but reporting on it, and this is just my thing, and this is not, I'm not throwing shade at any other outlet or anyone who, this is their thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think that speculation and news should be discussed in the same category. And a lot of this Switch stuff is appearing in very reputable publications where I feel like they're a little slight on the facts, or maybe they're reporting facts that are not fully verified.
Yeah.
And I think that there's more incentive to try to clickbait people than to actually inform people. And I think that's one of the unfortunate trends in not just video games media, but media in general.
Yeah, that I agree with. If you look at YouTube, I mean, every day there's a video that's at 100,000, 200,000 views with absolutely clickbait names, like plastered all over the title card, plastered all over the title of the video. Yeah, it's pretty bad. When we cover it, we always make sure to put either the word rumor or, if there's a leak, we would put something like potential leak or something like right in the title. We don't like the idea of betraying the trust of the people that are reading our content.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, when you look at some of the other like kind of like spammier Nintendo news YouTube channels, they're in it for the clicks and that's it. Like they want to get the clicks out. They want to get as many clicks as they can get.
Sure. And there's definitely a lot of fun to be had in the speculation process, as we're doing right now. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
It's fun to chat about and it's fun to speculate on.
But we're not insiders.
Right. We have no insider knowledge.
So everybody acts like they're an insider now. Everybody acts right. Like they have the news that nobody else has.
Right. And what I start to wonder if it isn't just kind of an echo chamber where one person whispers a rumor stating a credible, unverified source.
Yeah.
And then that publication is legitimate enough to be used as a source. So all of these publications are just sourcing each other with the same unverified rumor. And I
could
think
be. Could just be Nintendo a circle Switch, of garbage.
Yeah, I'm sure some of it is.
Yeah.
So when we finally do figure out what this Switch is, I would put good money on a lot of the things we've been hearing to pan out and be 100% true. Maybe it's this screen from Samsung. Maybe it's the $399 price tag.
Yeah.
Maybe the release window is not what people have been stating. So it's hard to really say anything with any degree of certainty because Nintendo is in the business of surprising and delighting. That is like their mantra. That's their mission statement. And with surprising being one of their primary objectives, you know that they're probably keeping a pretty tight lid. And I wouldn't put it past Nintendo to intentionally drop false information for the purposes of trying to control the media cycle and keep the narrative on their own terms.
I could see that. Yeah, I could. I mean, if I was in their position, I would imagine that's what I would do too, just to kind of keep I guess people guessing on what could potentially be happening.
I would be leaking if I was Nintendo. I'd be leaking garbage lies all the time. I would be creating the most horrible ideas ever, and then letting that hit the market and letting people's expectations really start to drop. And then when they actually see what it really is, it'll definitely be better than the lies that I had been spreading.
Yeah.
So the final product would be much better than the misinformation that people were already coming to fear. And then they'd immediately have a much better reception that way. But what tends to happen most of the time is the opposite, where people expect the moon. And then when what they get is anything short of that, it winds up being disappointing.
Oh yeah, nobody's going to be. I mean, people are going to be happy. The internet finds a way to get upset about everything. Skyward Sword, for instance. We have to talk about that. By the way.
Yes. Yeah. We definitely do. And the amiibo.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sorry, I might have just spiked my mic there. I got a little excited.
No, you're good. You're good. It's a good segue because I feel like with the Switch Pro, if you've noticed anything that Nintendo has tweeted over the past 2 days. All of the comments are about, where's the Switch Pro? Where's the Switch Pro? Like, it's Nintendo owes people something.
Right.
And it's very similar with the Skyward Sword thing. And the Skyward Sword thing, I'm on the fence about where I specifically lie. From the amiibo perspective, people need to shut up about the amiibo thing. I'll get into that in just a minute. But
from your lips to God's ears, I'm totally with you on that.
But from the game itself, yeah, maybe Nintendo's charging a bit too much for this one. $60 for a $50 game that, in the screenshots I've seen so far, don't look all that much different than what I remember on the Wii. And granted, it's an upscale. I mean, it's 1080p. It's 60 frames a second. They got rid of the motion controls. But is it really a $60 experience? I don't know. For me, yes. I mean, I'm a fan of this game. It's one of my favorite games of all time. But for $60 before. I think it was 60. It was either 60 or 70. You got yourself a gold Wii mote and a copy of Skyward Sword and the soundtrack to Skyward Sword.
Yeah, I purchased that. I purchased that set.
So
it might have been as high as 80, but whatever the case, it was a great deal. If you were going to buy it, that was the way to do it, because you got the super limited edition gold Wii Motion Plus controller,
which is great,
with the game. I definitely think that if you're trying to compare a value proposition, that one feels like a better value. But asking $60 for a Nintendo Switch version of Skyward Sword, I think, is exactly the price point. That's what you charged.
That is what Nintendo has been doing for their entire career. Their entire journey in business, Nintendo has been in the market of putting the Marios and the Zeldas in a premium category.
Yes.
It's one of the reasons why you typically don't see a game like Super Mario Odyssey or Breath of the Wild end up in that $20 bin like you see for first-party AAA titles on PlayStation. Like The Last of Us Part 2 went down to $19.99, like that. God of War went down to $5 at one point. You don't see that with Nintendo's because they are trying to keep that premium aesthetic on Mario and on Zelda and on all of their, high-end, what's the word I'm looking for? Just characters. But at the same time, too, I understand that people might not necessarily want to pay it, but this isn't anything that's new. People, I think, at this point just want to get up in arms about something.
And I don't think that Nintendo has any obligation to provide a product to any individual. Nintendo creates options.
Yeah.
So if Nintendo's going to make Skyward Sword HD for the Switch, they're going to put a price tag on it, and you as a consumer then can individually determine whether or not the value of that game is worth it to you. I'm so confused by this entitlement that seems to be specifically applied to the games industry as opposed to other mediums. Like, you don't really see people this crazy about movie tickets.
Yeah.
Where you're like, hey, it's not worth it for me to spend $20 to go spend 2 hours in this movie theater, but conversely, it's worth it to me to pay $20 to spend 2 hours in this movie theater, but it's not worth it to me to pay $60 for a game that's going to take me 70 hours.
Yeah.
Like it's people put too much value, I think, in the amount of time that goes into it. It doesn't really matter that Skyward Sword came out, what was it, 10 years ago?
Was it 10?
Man, I think it's the first game I ever played since I was with my wife.
Yeah.
Something like that. Because that was the 25th anniversary, right?
Yeah,
it was 25. And now we're at 35th. So 10 years ago, this game came out. It's a 10-year-old game. But the game itself has not lost its value. It doesn't matter how old it is.
Yeah.
They've refreshed the game. My children were not even born when this game came out.
Yeah.
Not one of them. So none of them had an opportunity to play this game. Nintendo is creating now an opportunity for a new generation of people who've never played this game on their current generation of hardware in a way that's been adapted to be specifically catered to the capabilities of this piece of hardware. You can now take it portable. You've never been able to do that before.
Yeah.
You can now use, I don't want to say traditional controls because this is still pretty non-traditional, but you can use non-motion controls with this game, which you've never been able to do before. And it has amiibo integration, which it's never had before. If you've played this game and you had the experience of Skyward Sword, I think there's a good chance you can look at it and say, it's not worth me spending $60 to re-experience this. But if you've never played it, like my children, it's absolutely worth paying $60 to play it because this is a brand new experience for them. And we're looking at, I think, a different landscape where Breath of the Wild is far and away the best-selling Legend of Zelda game that there's ever been. And it, I think, introduced a lot more Legend of Zelda fans into the market. So now Nintendo's able to somehow leverage a past property in a new way, connecting it to their most popular game of all time and making it available to a new crowd. And why would they not? And why would they artificially lower the value of the game because it's 10 years old or because people have played it before. The Switch is built on the back of ports.
Yeah.
Their best-selling games are ports. Not Animal Crossing, but Mario Kart 8, Wii game, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, Wii U game. Both those Wii U games. So I see no reason why this price tag should have anybody bothered. If you really don't like it, don't buy it. I didn't buy Twilight Princess HD. I already bought that game twice. Yeah. I played it through for GameCube. I played it through for Wii U. I played it through for Wii. I had my fill. I didn't feel like I needed to play it for Wii U, so I didn't. And I didn't feel bad about the fact that
you should feel bad.
They were charging what they were charging. But if they do release it for Switch in an HD version, I probably will buy it. Because
I have a sealed copy right here, by the way.
Oh, yeah, check that out. Sweetest amiibo ever made. Wolf Link with the best integration of all time. So there's that.
So here's the thing, though. It's the internet's an echo chamber, and it's one of the reasons why America's politics are as bad as they are. And you can relate that specifically to what we see with anytime Nintendo tweets anything about Skyward Sword or the amiibo.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is this echo chamber of angry people who are feeding other angry people. They're getting the likes, they're getting the comments, they're getting the retweets. It's feeding them to keep doing this. But these amiibo and the game, they sell out like that. So here's where I have a distinct viewpoint on this specific topic. Anytime I tweet out anything about that amiibo, there is a flood of angry, bitter people on my posts, on both Amiibo News, on Nintendo Wire, on Amiibo Jason. It's everywhere. And it's to a point where I don't understand it. I don't understand where that frustration is coming from. But where my perspective comes in is I can see how many people are clicking on the links, and I can see how many pre-orders I'm getting from my links. So if you don't know this, I mean, we have affiliation with Amazon and Best Buy and GameStop. So we typically get a small percentage of any of the sales that we make. We use that to pay our team, to pay for our server. It's not like I'm pocketing all of this money. But I can see how many of these are selling, and my God, is it gangbusters. It's ridiculous. It's an insane, insane amount. This amiibo specifically, with how much hate it's gotten, with how much money it costs $10 more than the standard amiibo. It's $25.
Yeah.
Has sold out faster than any amiibo I have covered since the Smash days. I'm not talking the recent Smash days. I'm talking the Smash Wii U days. Like, it's gangbusters how quickly these things are selling. People want these. There is a demand for them. There is a lot of hype for them. And by and large, I think the reception to both the game and the amiibo has been exceedingly positive. But you can't see that when you're looking at Twitter or Facebook. You just can't.
Well, I think we tend to follow people who share our interests. So most of what we are seeing on Twitter is not the casual consumer. We're probably mostly following either video game insiders or extreme video game enthusiasts who have very strong feelings and opinions about games. So generally, we're dealing with a more informed user base anyway, and so they're gonna have stronger opinions about this kind of thing. But I don't think that gives us a general sense of what most of Nintendo's customers are seeing. This amiibo is glorious. It is immediately one of the best amiibo that's ever been created. The fact that it's part of the Legend of Zelda series, this certainly bodes well for it. There's nothing wrong with another Zelda amiibo.
It's the best Zelda, in my opinion. Skyward Sword Zelda is one of the most unique and amazing forms of Zelda because of how radically different she is.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. I'm very excited.
I love her characterization in this game. I think she has a stronger characterization in this game than most other games. Maybe more so than any other Zelda game, except arguably Breath of the Wild. But the design is probably not my favorite version of her. It might actually be one of my least favorite, but even with that in mind, I still think that this amiibo is top shelf.
Yeah.
We don't do pre-orders out here in Taiwan. Amiibo tend to be in fairly low supply, but they're are a lot of places that sell them. So yeah. There are a lot of opportunities to get them. The first time that I had a real problem buying one were the Monster Hunter Amiibo. And Monster Hunter in Asia is just a whole nother game.
Yeah.
I cannot even...
People take off work for that, I've heard.
They took off work. Yeah, there are lines down the Taipei Main Station Mall,
yeah,
wrapping around for half of a mile just for this game. And I don't know if Zelda's going to get that kind of love. With some of the Smash Amiibo, I have bought the last ones. Like, there's been a few times where I've walked into a store and they only had two left,
yeah,
and it happened to be the two I was looking for. But I also didn't wait at the door. I walked in at the end of the day when I had an opportunity to get there. I wasn't in much of a rush. But when this Zelda stuff comes out, I'm going to want that Zelda Amiibo.
Yeah.
I'm going to begrudgingly purchase that unbelievably gorgeous set of Joy-Cons.
Which is by... Have we talked about that on the show before?
Those we have not.
My God. My God.
They're amazing.
So nice.
We talked about you wanting there to be Zelda Joy-Cons and hoping that they were not gold. And then I said, oh, please let them be gold.
No gold, man.
And then they were announced, and I knew immediately that you were going to be very
happy. They are based on this glorious design. This is, and I'm going to say it right now, this is the best, hands down, with the exception of maybe the Japanese exclusive liquid metal slime 2DS XL.
No, you were right the first time. For those of you audio listeners, Jason is holding up the Hylian Shield version of the new 3DS XL, and it is,
it's sexy.
Far and away, the best. Second to none.
It's sexy. This... Say it's sexy. Say it's sexy.
It is.
It's very sexy.
It has the royal family crest on it. It also has these embossed and beveled... what would you call, like...
It's raised, and...
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, I mean, the nice thing about the 2DS XL... is they are aiming to have this more three-dimensional feel with
all
of their
three-dimensional embellishments.
So yeah, it's gorgeous, it's stunning, and I'm happy to see that's what we're getting for this upcoming set of Joy-Con. Are Joy-Con expensive? Yeah, they are. And by the way, I had my first major Joy-Con.
And are they
today.
Junky? Yes,
yeah, they are.
They're extremely junky.
I was playing Cuphead today, and my jump button just stopped working on my Joy-Con. Yeah. I have used these Joy-Con. These are a new set of Joy-Con. I've used them about maybe for 3 hours tops. So I'm not too happy about that, by the way.
Yeah, my daughter's Animal Crossing ones that came with the Animal Crossing set that only she used. And once in a while, I would pick up if they just happened to be the ones that were synced.
Yeah.
But the total game time of these is probably like you, somewhere in the 3 hour range. The up direction just completely went out. It's not even a drift issue. If you push up on the controller, it won't move. I'm like, what is this? These are brand new. And it's so discouraging and disappointing for me to say because of Nintendo's longstanding reputation for creating some of the highest quality controllers of anyone in the industry. And these are just such a letdown. And what is even a bigger letdown is it doesn't stop people from buying them. In fact, the drift probably positively affects Nintendo's bottom line because once controllers start drifting, people go and buy more.
Yeah.
And I have 10 sets, or not 10 sets, I have 10 Joy-Con, and I'm going to go buy these Legend of Zelda ones.
Because we're suckers. Yeah, we are. I use Joy-Con when I'm forced to. I use the Split Pad Pro from Hori for handheld mode, which is, and I've said this before on the show, the best way to use the Switch in handheld mode. Or a pro controller in standard mode, which I know you and I have different opinions on the pro controller, but
yeah,
I do need to just point out one more thing about before we move on to E3 about this Amiibo.
Yeah. Let's talk functionality. We haven't discussed that.
So the functionality is tapping the Amiibo in the game will essentially allow you to instantly warp from either the sky to the ground or the ground to the sky, anywhere you are. Without the need of finding what they call these bird statues that are scattered around Hyrule, which allow you to do that pretty much anytime you'd want to if you found the bird statue. I guess the big functionality of this is it lets you do this inside a dungeon, so you're essentially creating a warp point from the dungeon to the sky. So if you're about to fight a boss and you're just completely undersupplied. You can, you know, go to Skyloft and go to a town and buy some hearts or find a fairy or stock up on arrows, making the game a bit easier for the most part.
Yeah.
But my God, this is not this amazing new functionality. It's not quality of life. This is a make the game easier function. If you look at a map of every major area in this game, there is a bird statue no more than 2 minutes away at any given point, depending on where you are in the overworld. It does not take a long time to traverse to a bird statue, and that's the way the game was designed. Amiibo have functionality. That's what they do. Sometimes it's huge, sometimes it's not so huge. I've been doing this for 6 years with Amiibo. This functionality in this Amiibo, in my opinion, it's kind of lackluster, but the fact that people are treating this Amiibo functionality like the second coming of Christ, and they're saying that this functionality should have been built into the game, they're putting it behind a paywall, the game's literally unplayable without this functionality. Shut up!
That
for God's sakes! People need... I don't know. I think it's a combination of the pandemic, and I think it's a weird sense of just people wanting just to get angry at everything. I've never seen hate for an Amiibo more in my life. And it makes no sense to me.
It's so strange to me, because this... It's not game-changing. It's a... People say, "What? It's a convenience that should be afforded to every single player." It's not that convenient. It's if you have to get up from playing the game to go grab the biggest amiibo ever made, save for maybe Mega Yarn Yoshi.
Yeah.
It's probably the heaviest amiibo ever made. And you're going to scan this thing just so that you can have quicker access. You probably will take you longer than it would have taken you just to run to the nearest Skyloft statue or a bird statue, whatever the case may be. It's nice that you have the option. It's something that you may occasionally use, but I would liken it more to the functionality of the Cat Mario and Cat Peach amiibo, where maybe you're struggling on a Mario level and
you need
just
a heart.
You don't want to do it again. Mario Odyssey is another one. You just need a little heart here. It's not game changing. To me, I would say that, and not everyone would agree, but I think the Wolf Link amiibo is way more game changing.
Yeah.
Because in Skyward Sword, no, I'm sorry.
Breath
in Twilight Princess HD, it was a gatekeeper to a whole new dungeon. So if you want to be able to go access the Cave of Shadows, you needed to have the Wolf Link amiibo. It was actually blocking out content. And then in Breath of the Wild, which to this day I still think is the best amiibo functionality, you can have Wolf Link as a canine companion throughout most of your journey through Hyrule in Breath of the Wild, only if you have that amiibo. There's no other way to spawn Wolf Link into Breath of the Wild than to have that amiibo. Those are far more transformative.
And I don't remember seeing a single negative thing about that functionality. People were ecstatic to throw money at that.
Right.
I think
maybe it's the combination of how far apart amiibo are released now, and also that people have very high expectations for Skyward Sword. Also, this is an unusually expensive amiibo, although I would argue it's probably worth the price tag.
It's bizarre, though, to a certain level. I thought it might be bigger than a standard amiibo, but it's not.
I'm glad it's not. Well, it kind of is. It's not bigger than a standard amiibo in terms of the base, but in terms of the amount of plastic that's occupying the base, it's probably three times that, which is typical. Like, if you were to compare this to any other Legend of Zelda amiibo, where you have, like, a Link or a Zelda standing there, this one has a Zelda standing there plus a Loftwing on it.
I would say, with the exception of, like, Daruk. Like, Daruk is pretty... So, here, I made a infographic. I'm going to throw that up on the screen here if you're watching the video portion of it. So, here is Zelda and Loftwing in comparison to other amiibo. It's more detailed, yes. It's not all that much bigger. If you compare it to the original Zelda amiibo. So how I did this was I measured the base. I made sure the bases were exactly the same size in all of these stock images. So it's not like it's this huge amiibo. it's pretty expensive. They're going the route, they're saying it's two characters on one base, and I'll give them that. It is.
Yeah, I'll give them that.
But it's by far, at least for me, it's worth every penny. It is gorgeous. It is amazing.
Yeah, if you compare
this to other amiibo that have come out in the past, it is the most detailed looking one I think I've ever seen. So I'm excited. I wish people, and I know that I'm probably preaching to the choir because I'm guessing the people that are listening to this or watching this are probably in the same boat where we appreciate amiibo for what they are. It's not, I guess the biggest gripe I have with it, it's when people are calling it $25 DLC.
Yeah.
Like it's this digital token and that's it. It's a piece of art that you are going to display next to your other amiibo or on a shelf or do whatever you want with it. I mean, it's this physical piece of art that you get to get. I mean, the functionality is secondary, at least for me and a lot of other people too. It's a gorgeous statue of a game that means a whole lot to me. So $25, I'm good with that.
Nintendo definitely hits from a lot of different angles with this. You have people who purchase it because they want to display it as a piece of art. You have people who purchase it because they want to unlock whatever it accesses in the game. And I think that that's okay. The onus is on the player and the consumer to determine whether or not the value proposition is there for them.
Yeah.
And that's, everyone has that freedom of choice. It's not like they're forcing you to purchase this in order to play the game. If you don't want to buy it, don't buy it.
Yeah.
If you want to have it, but you don't want to buy it because you don't think that the price point is right, then you got a choice to make.
Yeah.
Either you buy it or you don't. And there's certainly been times where I've been in that position. I've bought things that I thought were just such an astronomical waste of my money.
Yeah.
And I've bought things that I thought were an unbelievable deal. To me, Breath of the Wild, for example, that's a $200 game for me that I spent $60 on. Immortals Fenyx Rising, that's a game that I wouldn't buy from a bargain bin for $5 and I wasted $60 on.
It's so good. It was so good.
I don't think we've ever had a stronger difference of opinion on any game.
I love it. I had such a blast.
Like, oh, you're going to love this game. It's so awesome. Like five minutes into it, I'm like,
it checks off all the boxes for you. Greek mythology. I
totally agree. Like
the game is Breath of the Wild.
It's so miserable to play though. Like controlling the character is something I just can't get around.
All right.
I know I'm in the minority here because there's so many people who I follow who are like, yeah, Immortals Fenyx Rising is awesome. I just love my time with this game. I want more. And I'm like, Ubisoft, stop sending me updates about this game because I cannot tell you how much I hate it.
I got the PS5 version. It's so much more fun playing it on that. But I'm blown away with what they did with that game on the Switch. I can't believe they got that thing running as well as they got it running. But we don't need to rehash that.
Barely
open that wound again. All right, real quick, while we're on the Zelda topic, I guess a lot of us are expecting for E3 Nintendo to hopefully open the door to more 35th anniversary goodies for The Legend of Zelda, something similar to what we got for Mario's 35th anniversary. There's rumors that we're going to see Twilight Princess and Wind Waker make their way to the Nintendo Switch this year. I personally am hoping for something a bit different. I would love HD remasters of Ocarina of Time 3D and Majora's Mask 3D on the Switch. I would love the ability to play Ocarina of Time on the Switch. Yeah. So any thoughts from you? Do you think we're going to see any additional Zelda 35 stuff this year?
I think
there
has to be more Zelda chatter coming up this year. I'd be very surprised if Nintendo got through the 35th anniversary without at least having some special acknowledgement.
Yeah.
And I do think that they wanted a little bit of breathing room from Mario's 35th anniversary ending so that we can leave, and also Pokemon's 25th. So this is a really big anniversary year for a lot of franchises, and Zelda's a big one. And if we have all these things on top of each other, it starts to kind of diminish the impact of all of them. So spacing them out's a pretty key strategy. I'm with you where I think it's entirely possible that Twilight Princess HD and Wind Waker HD will find their way to the Switch at some point. It wouldn't surprise me so much if that was this year.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't mind if they left a little bit bigger of a gap since we did just get those on the last console.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind if they held off on that, because those seem like pretty easy ports that they can pull the trigger on any time. Whereas a Majora's Mask and an Ocarina of Time HD, or like some kind of upscaling of what they made for the 3DS on the Switch, would really be phenomenal. I would really be disappointed if they gave us straight ports of the 64 version like they did with the Super Mario All-Stars.
Yeah.
I would rather have something that had more refined controls, because while I love Ocarina of Time, for me it is a product of its time, and it doesn't, the controls are not refined enough for me to go back to after having played Breath of the Wild, and that the age is definitely felt.
It's tough, though, because I think it's a split category of how people want to see these games come out. I think Ocarina of Time 3D is the closest for me that I'm willing to move with those games, because the clunkiness is part of the experience for me. The same with Mario 64. You and I have talked about this.
Yeah.
Mario 64, does it control as good as modern Mario games? No. It doesn't. But when I pick it up, I know I'm playing Mario 64. I know the nuances. I know the restrictions. I actually bought an adapter that lets me hook up a Nintendo 64 controller to the Switch so I could play it more naturally that way too. And it feels great. I love how it feels.
I think the only people who can have an appreciation for how that game plays are people who've played it when it originally released.
Yeah.
Because no new gamers can get on with that. My son, who is quite a prodigy when it comes to gaming, he can play Mario 64 for all of like 5 minutes before he's like, "Dad, this game is bad." And I said, "Yeah, you're right. It is bad." So Nintendo has to kind of determine, to him it's bad. To me, it was the greatest game that had ever been created in the history of the world when it released. I can't play it now. A lot of people have nostalgia for the game. I have fond memories of the game. I loved playing it. I thought it was a masterpiece. It does not hold up for modern gamers. So anybody who tries to play that game now, there have been so many advancements in the way that 3D characters control that the restrictions of the camera and trying to navigate your movement in the space, it just doesn't hold up for modern audiences. So Nintendo has to make the decision of, who are we selling to? Are we selling this to people who are nostalgic for their childhood, or are we selling this to new gamers? And I think that whenever possible, it's almost always better to try to cater to new gamers.
Yeah.
Because the nostalgic gamers are still going to buy it.
That's true.
But the new gamers are going to be disappointed when they play Mario Odyssey, and then they go back and they try to play Mario 64. They're going to be like, this is unplayable, which is the experience of my kids. All three of them were, their first Mario game ever was Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah.
And so for them to move from 3D World into Odyssey was such a natural extension. For them to try to go from Odyssey to 64 or Sunshine, it was impossible. It was unplayable.
Part of me feels like Nintendo has no incentive to do that. Where if, let's say they would have made Mario 64 modern to a degree, they fix the controls to a certain level, they've let's say upscaled it, not even upscaled it, let's say brand new assets, do you think it would have sold at a rate that's significantly higher that would warrant the additional cost it would take for them to create a new version of it? Or do you think
there's two questions there. I think on the one hand, the cost benefit analysis, it would not be worth it, because they can sell the original game with minimal effort for far less money, and they've proven that they can do it.
Oh, and it's minimal. It's the most minimal effort.
It's the most minimal effort. But if they were to take Mario 64 and build that in the Odyssey engine, they have created the greatest Mario game that has ever existed. That would all of a sudden be Mario's pinnacle achievement. It's Mario's greatest 3D adventure in Mario's best engine, and it would surpass all other Mario games. But is there incentive to do that? That costs money. That would take time. Do I think that overall it could eventually result in more money? Absolutely, I do, because I think that would have some legs.
Yeah.
That would have way more legs than 3D All-Star, and I think it might even go on to be competitive with Mario Odyssey. I think everybody who bought Mario Odyssey would be able to play Mario 64 in the Odyssey engine.
In my opinion, Mario Odyssey is Mario 64. It's the closest thing we have. I think if you look at Mario 64, it is small in comparison. It's the levels are so condensed and tiny and microscopic. I mean, they felt huge to me as a kid. But when I compare that to a level in Odyssey, like that, just these sprawling levels. I mean, even New Donk City, it's a massive city for you to explore. There was nothing even close to that size in Mario 64. I know you and I don't have the same opinion on Mario Odyssey either. I think Mario Right. Odyssey was, in my opinion, the best Mario game that's ever released. 3D Mario game.
I think it has the best controls of any Mario game that ever released, and it's by far the worst of any of the 3D Marios in terms of the storyline, the game mechanics.
The story? Come on, man. That was great.
I just cannot stand the ghost hat, and I'm really put off by the possession replacing power-ups.
Yeah.
But I also acknowledge that that's purely a me thing, because clearly Mario Odyssey is extremely beloved by both casual and hardcore yeah. gamers. I know that I'm in the minority there. But to circle back around to Zelda, do I think that they're going to take the time to put Ocarina of Time into the Breath of the Wild engine? No, I don't. But do I think that there's a possibility that they might take what they built in for the 3DS remake
yeah.
and up-res that with new textures, kind of similar to what they did with Link's Awakening?
Yeah.
That I think is a distinct possibility, and I do think it would be a lot less work than trying to take the 64. They could obviously just straight up port the 64 to the Switch, and that's not going to be an issue. But I think it would be a lot better if they took the 3DS versions, which would have a much fresher feel and much more modern look.
Yeah.
Much more acceptable play controls for people who are more familiar with modern 3D games. I would put those into the category of modern 3D games. So if we could get that onto the Switch, that would be probably my highest realistic ambition of what we could see for Breath of the Wild. Zelda content for the rest of this year. Yeah. Because I just don't... there is a threshold. Like, there's a breaking point where there is such a thing as too much Zelda. I don't feel that way, but there is
yeah.
only so much the market can bear. If they were to just throw everything out there. Hey, here's
All Majora's in one Mask year.
And yeah. Ocarina of Time and Skyward Sword HD and Twilight Princess HD. And what else do you want? How about some Wind Waker HD? That's five really big Zelda games right there that they could easily charge $60 each for. If they're going to do that, I do think that they're going to make a lot less money than if they spaced those releases out.
Yeah.
And plus, somewhere in the reasonably near future, you have to imagine there's going to be a Breath of the Wild 2.
that's crazy talk.
I don't think that that's going to be this year.
Oh, I don't think so either. It's going to be 2022 for sure.
But I do think we're going to see it at E3.
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to get a tremendous amount of it at E3. And by tremendous, I mean double what we've seen already.
Yeah, I think it will officially double what we've seen. I think we'll see one trailer.
A name reveal?
For game footage. Yeah, a name reveal, a release window, no gameplay footage, like a cutscene compilation is what I would guess.
What's the name going to be? Second Breath?
Let's see. Legend of Zelda. The unspoken. I don't know. Put me on the spot there. I know what it is. It's going to be Legend of Zelda Whispers.
Whispers.
Whispers of Another Age. Yeah.
Whispers of Another Age.
No, because we had Age of Calamity, so I'm going to change this. Whispers of the Past.
Yeah. Whispers
of the Past. I know we had Link to the Past, but...
All right. That's your call. I'm going to say Second Breath.
I love
it. Because it's so
bad. What if they called it Second Wind?
I like that, too. Breaking Wind.
Oh, I think you got a winner there.
There we go. So real quick, before we go, I want to just fire off some things real quick on what you're expecting to see at E3. My thought would be we're going to see Metroid Prime Trilogy. I think we're going to get, like, 4 is coming. We'll get to it at some point. I think we're going to get nothing on 4. I would love to see Bayonetta 3. I'm putting that in my probably not going to happen card right now. I think we're going to see Zelda 35. I think we're going to see Breath of the Wild 2. I think we're going to get a tease for Mario Odyssey 2. That's my thought.
I really hope that Mario Odyssey 2 is not a thing. I hope that they let that one go and that they move on something different. I think that the only thing that I'm quite certain of is we're going to get a Smash character reveal. That's probably the one thing that I'd be willing to put money on. I also think that there will be some Zelda acknowledgement, though I can't say for sure what I think it's going to be. I don't think that they're going to put much focus on Skyward Sword, because I think that they've already done everything that needs to be done about that game.
Yeah.
So I think
they're tweeting about it like 10 times a day. So
I doubt we're going to get much information about games that we already have a lot of information on. So I doubt we'll see too much Mario Golf. I think we're going to potentially see some titles that have been dormant since the Switch's launch. So maybe it's time for a new Mario Kart. Maybe it's time for a new Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
I definitely am not expecting Metroid Prime Trilogy anytime soon or ever. And I don't think Metroid Prime 4 is going to have anything at all. Not even a logo, nothing.
I think
not even an update or a mention.
I honestly believe Metroid Prime Trilogy is going to be used as a means to sell the Switch Pro.
Metroids don't sell anything ever.
That's true. Just to say, like, listen, we have this first-person shooter. Here's what it looks like if we upscale it in 4K. And I think it's going to be like a tech. Like, here's this new piece of hardware. Because if you throw Mario Odyssey in there, it's not going to be all that shocking. When you're throwing in this, like, gritty first-person shooter, I think that there's more room for, like, the wow factor. I think it's going to be the tech demo to sell the Switch Pro.
I'm, like, almost convinced, 100% convinced, that they're going to sell Breath of the Wild 2 with the Switch Pro. Oh, because it was such a winning formula the first time around that I think Nintendo's going to want to see if they can strike lightning twice. And I think it absolutely would. Breath of the Wild was a unbelievably vast adventure for people. And it really showcased some of the advantages of the Switch, being able to go portable.
Yeah.
And while you could still see some of the, I would say, DNA from what it could have been as a dedicated Wii U title,
it did
migrate to the Switch fairly seamlessly. And Breath of the Wild 2 will be the first Zelda game specifically built for the Switch. So that, I think, will have a lot of selling power if they want to try to connect those two together. I think it's going to be Mario or Zelda.
Yeah.
That's going to be the launch title.
All right. I mean, we have a week and a half to, I guess, get our stuff together to see what we're going to get end up getting at E3. I can't wait to talk to you about what we're going to see from Breath of the Wild 2. Honestly, I don't know anybody that would get more excited about that than you.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I think it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, I'm super pumped. It starts for me at midnight and goes to 4 a.m.
So oh, man.
It's going to be a crazy night.
You and I definitely need to get together right after E3 to at least talk about it, about what they showed.
Yeah, we got
to
do a follow-up, discuss all the ways that we got it horribly wrong.
Yeah.
I'll eat some crow.
You know, most of our predictions have been pretty safe. I don't think either of us, nobody threw out Mother 3, which means
Mother 3 has never happened.
Which means it's going to happen this year.
No, it's never, never happening.
At some point, they're just going to throw it on Nintendo Switch Online and just call it a day. But I think most of our predictions have been pretty safe. But let's talk again after E3 or if a Switch Pro ends up getting announced in the next few days.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
Where can the people at home find you?
You can check me out on the Nintendo Wire YouTube channel, where I release a pseudo news wrap-up / variety show every week on Fridays called Me Weekly. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Custom Conquest.
Awesome. You can find me on my personal Twitter account, which was recently not verified by Twitter, at AmiiboJason.
Rude.
I know, right? Over at NintendoWire.com, on YouTube, I am working to try to get more content published. It's tough. It's going to come back soon. So stay tuned for more information on there. So anything else, TJ?
I'll hold the fort down while you're
inundated
with baby duties.
Yeah, that last video you did on the Miitopia, that did well. Still doing well.
Oh, man, we didn't even talk about Miitopia at all, but let me say that game has taken over my life. It was made for me.
Is that no pun intended?
Well, I will accept the pun.
Okay.
It's not necessarily expressly intended, but I do appreciate its comedic value.
There we go. All right, guys. Until next time, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.